Hello and welcome to the IA's YouTube channel, IA London, and today's topical discussion on statues, history and collective memory. I'm Syed Kamal, the Academic Research Director here at the Institute of Economic Affairs, and I'm also a Professor of Politics and International Relations at St Mary's University in Twickenham. Please do subscribe to our IA London YouTube channel by hitting the notification bell and visit our website ia.org.uk, where you can also make a donation, no matter how modest, to enable us to continue putting out cutting-edge content daily and for free. Now, in recent weeks, we've seen a resurgence of a debate around statues in public places. One of Edward Colston was thrown in a river in Bristol, and Oxford College is going to remove a statue of Cecil Rhodes. And in recent weeks, we've seen attacks on statues of Ulysses Grant, Lincoln, and Gandhi. In Belgium, King Leopold II, who ran a particularly vicious campaign in the Congo, has been taken down. But there's also been some pushback. For example, the French president has said that statues are a part of French history and won't be taken down. In Germany, a Marxist-Leninist party has gone one step further, that has actually unveiled a new statue, a public statue of Lenin, no doubt to furious protest. Now, in the UK, this all began as an outcry against symbols of racism, which were triggered by the murder of George Floyd in the US. And it has led to a charged debate over the proper way to judge historical figures, and it's drawn in a number of politicians, think tankers, and commentators. Well, I'm delighted to be joined today by Conservative commentator Alex Dean and by Dr. Steve Davies, Head of Education here at the IEA. So let me turn to both of you, gentlemen, perhaps starting with you, Alex. What's your take on the toppling of statues, particularly as a tool to eliminate racism? And what do you make of the outcry from both sides in response to this?
At the start of Julius Caesar, or at least in Act One, the mob captures a man called Cinna, Cinna with a C. But it turns out he's not Cinna the conspirator, he's Cinna the poet. And so what, cries Shakespeare's mob, tear him for his bad verses. And I thought about this when even the BBC realised the absurdity of the demands for the removal of a statue of Robert Peel, demands which were based on the belief that the Peel memorialised in the statue was Peel Senior, Robert Peel's father, rather than the Peel that was depicted. And the protesters' response in that campaign was, take it down anyway. We live in a time that is truly about the sins of the father. Tear him for his bad verses, indeed. My point, Saeed, is what starts with statues, I think, doesn't end with statues. And in fact, what starts with statues isn't really about statues anyway. I think we are now in the foothills of a culture war. And the sides, to be clear, are nothing to do with race. The sides are not to do with black and white. They're to do with those who want to destroy culture and those who want to preserve it. This very day on Twitter, I saw demands for the destruction of any image of Christ that depicted him as any form of European person, any white or light-skinned Christ image. It would be the kind of destruction up and down the land in churches and cathedrals that we experienced under the Puritans. So I think these things should be opposed at every turn, not least because resisting calls for destruction on A prevents them, or at least slows them down, from moving on to call for destruction on B.
So, Alex, do you have any sympathy for any of the statues that are being called to be removed? You know, for any of the particular specific people being particularly unpleasant or involved in the slave trade? Or do you think we have to see it in the context of its time?
I have absolutely no sympathy with the destruction of things contrary to any kind of due process or protocol. And it's a bit like, I'm afraid, and people will not like the comparison, it's a bit like dealing with terrorists. The cause may be amply justifiable and the issues might be well discussed over a negotiating table. But until you renounce violence in the cause of pursuing those things, I'm unwilling to discuss any of it with you. These people, I think, should be opposed at every turn. And not only that, if you don't think that the statues matter one bit, don't worry, they'll get around to attacking something that you do like. So let's consider some of the things that have come under the spotlight in the last week. Films, books, blue plaques commemorating historic figures, street names, town names. I mean, a veritable bonfire of the vanities awaits us. Now, if we're going to go down that course as a society, a course I would lament, let's at least do it democratically and have a vote on it first so that I can register my dissent and lose rather than just having the mob dictate things to us.
So you're open to the idea of statues you know, being removed, but as long as a due process is followed.
Yeah, I'm unwilling to discuss to give a single inch of it until people renounce violence and the rule of the mob in order to get their way. It's just like negotiating with anyone who wants to talk about violence. You shouldn't even concede any premise in these discussions until you are willing to say we're going to deal with these things peaceably. Because if someone thinks they can come to the table talking about things but have in their back pocket the idea that if they don't get their way, they'll enforce it through violence anyway, you're not having a proper negotiation discussion process to begin with.
Well, Steve, you have I'm sure there's much of what Alex said that you'll agree with, but you come from a slightly different perspective, don't you? Why don't you explain how you view it?
Well, to start off by saying where I agree with Alex, I agree completely with him that there's no time for campaigns of violent iconoclasm, which I have to say have a long history in this country, going back to the 17th century and the Puritans who smashed up a whole bunch of our medieval art work during the 17th century. So like him, I have no time for that because it's a completely inappropriate way of behaving. And it's a way of trying to actually short circuit any kind of actual conversation or argument. Now, on the other hand, though, I am not as attached as maybe Alex is to the idea that you should have public memorials, or indeed as many of these iconoclasts are, because I think the argument that I'm hearing from them is not that there should be no public memorials, it's just that the ones we have are the wrong ones and that we need to have different ones. What I think is shared, actually, strangely, by Alex and these violent iconoclastic mobs that he's talking about, is the idea that it's appropriate or correct to have public monuments, public statues of famous people. My own position actually is that while it's perfectly appropriate to have memorials of people, these should not be public. In other words, I would not have public memorials, statues that is, of anybody. And what I would say is that if you want to commemorate somebody, you should do so through private action. You should have a memorial, a statue or a monument in a private space, a place that is not open to public view and which you have to pay to enter, something like a theme park, for example, maybe a private museum or collection, and that's where they should be located. Because I think that having memorials of any kind in a public place is essentially an attempt or an effort to do the kind of thing Alex is talking about, which is to impose a particular kind of historical narrative on the wider public conversation. And like him, I don't want to get into the kind of world where everything is entirely up for grabs and where basically whenever you have a general election and a change of power, you find that one lot of statues gets pulled down and another lot presumably kept for the required need in a warehouse and then put up in their place. Or the kind of thing we've had in the history of some Latin American countries where every so often there's a change in government and all the street names change.
Well, Steve, we don't start from a state of nature. We start from where we are now. Some of these statues are up there. Clearly, if these statues were being erected today, some would go up and some wouldn't go up. How do you suggest that we deal with the statues that are already there? Do we just grandfather them? Do we apply your thinking to the new statues?
No, I think we should actually move quite sharply in the direction of, as I say, taking down all of the statues that we now have and putting them in some kind of theme parks. So, for example, up here in Manchester, we have statues of Gladstone, Peel again, Cobden, Bright, a lot of great 19th century liberal figures. What I would do with those statues is take them down and put them in a park dedicated, if you like, to venerating and commemorating the memory of liberal reform and the movement for liberal reform in 19th and 20th century Britain. We also have a statue of Cromwell, interestingly. You could make a case for him being included in that theme park, or maybe not. That statue actually has an interesting history. I would do it to all of them. And I would basically allow people to voluntarily come up with proposals for what they should do with them. So we have lots of statues in London, for example, of leading figures in the history of the British Empire, people like Henry Havelock, Charles Napier, Outram, and the other great figures who created the British Empire. And what I think people who like that history or who think that it's worth commemorating or remembering in some way, what they should do is club together and set up a place for them, and they should go there. Similarly, I think that the kind of statues that commemorate, let's say, socialist, left-wing, anti-imperialist figures, they should also go to a different kind of theme park, and people can then choose to go whether they want to or not. There will no longer be a kind of public message put out by having, you know, place statues of figures like that in public places, public venues.
Yeah. Alex, I can see you're urgent to come in here, but
it's interesting, isn't it? Because it demonstrates the richness and the breadth that the free market, libertarian-minded environment provides. And I think it's the politest start I can say is look how diverse perspectives we can have are people who are involved in and love the IEA and yet reach so divergent views on a topic like this. Our country is not a theme park. And I think that commemoration of things, if I start at the very height of it, I think that, unless he wants to say differently, Steve's ideas would mean we wouldn't have the cenotaph, for example, for national or moments of national commemoration, many of whom sadly have died, but some of the people involved in the great sacrifice that we made in the Second World War are still with us. Steve would pull down the cenotaph, for example.
He wouldn't pull it down, he would move it, as far as I understand.
Yeah, well, either way, it would lead to a denuded public space, a denuded civic space in which we were effectively starting from a state of nature. And I'm actually with President Macron on this. Doesn't the current times produce strange bedfellows? I think President Macron is right to say our history is our history, and you don't get to distort or deny it and seek to live in an environment that is based in the glorious year zero, not least because in a time when we forget what's gone before us and the rich tapestry, or just shunt it to one side to be in a museum or even, as Steve says, a theme park, you are denying your background, your history, your legacy, and saying that you as a society are some kind of odd futurist utopia. And I don't think most of us would pretend that we're anything like that.
Well, Steve, let me turn to both of you about what perhaps some critics would say of both your views. So, Steve, wouldn't critics accuse you of just basically giving in to mob rule? You know.
No, because I would want to make very clear that I'm not doing this as a kind of way to placate the people who are engaging in this kind of mob violence that Alex is talking about. As Alex rightly says, they're not going to be placated. I mean, they have their own agenda, which I do not share, by the way. And as he says, if you know, they will pick on some other kind of symbolic issue rather than this to advance their cause if that happens. Now, I think this is something that we should do anyway. I mean, I came to this position that I've just allocated several years ago, independently of protests about statues and public memorials. It has to do with what I think about the relationship between the public space and shared forms of life, basically. And as Alex says, it shows what variety there is within what you might call broadly the classical liberal movement. Now, where I would take issue with Alex is that I don't think this is about history. I think history and commemoration, memorialization of the past are different things. History is an academic discipline, and the way that you learn about history, the way that you become aware of history, is through historical education, through studying the works that historians have done, because history is actually an academic discipline, the goal and aim of which is to take the evidence from the past and to construct a picture and a story of the past which is as accurate as it can possibly be. So, you know, putting my historian's hat on myself, I would say that if you're a historian, you're a bit like a forensic scene of crime officer or a detective. What you're trying to do is to reconstruct a story. Now, what Alex is talking about and what Emmanuel Macron is talking about actually is not history, but memory. And the idea that Alex is alluding to here, I think, is that there is somehow a kind of shared or collective or common memory out there, that we all in Britain today or in any other society like France have a kind of collective memory of our past. And in that sense, a thing like a statue is meant to be like an aid memoir. It's meant to kind of jog your memory when you see it. And it's meant to serve as a kind of also a way in which that memory is, if you like, not just prompted, but formed. Now, this is where we disagree quite sharply, I think. I think that that is basically untrue, because I do not think there is such a shared memory.
Right.
Not in a pluralistic society such as ours, or indeed in most human societies, actually. If you just look across the narrow waters of the Irish Sea in Ireland, is there a single shared memory in Ireland? Well, no, clearly not. There is at least two kind of memories there. And the point also is that memory is by its nature something radically subjective. Anyone who's ever interviewed or looked at how police interview people who've witnessed an event or an accident is always struck by the way in which, after about a while, you begin to think, do these people actually see the same thing? Because the way they remember it, honestly and sincerely, is so radically different. And I think that's true at the collective level as well. So I think that it's actually an illusion. I see Alex, I'll stop in a minute and Alex come back at me. I think it's a bit of an illusion to think, and in some ways a dangerous illusion to think, that there is a kind of shared or common memory of that kind. And I think that public memorialization is an attempt to either pretend that there is one, or more often actually, to try and create and sustain a shared memory out of the actual reality of something which is much more messy.
Yeah, you understand Steve's point, Alex, about the shared memory?
I do, and I'm grateful to him, because I think actually we put our finger on where and why we disagree. I agree that history is an academic discipline, but I do not believe that it is only an academic discipline. I do think that it is part of what goes towards contributing to a national culture and, yes, a national shared belief. And that's why I suppose I find myself, supposedly Macron was somewhat of the left, but in this, he has that sort of semi-patriotic, semi-nationalist, I say, some would say, meaning it critically, but I don't, sense of the existence of a nation. And boy, oh boy, didn't de Gaulle cherish the same, just thinking of the reason for Macron's visit to the UK this week. So I think you've put your finger on where the disagreement exists. Not only do I think that history does contribute to that national memory, I think it should, and I want us to have that shared cultural national memory, even if we don't. Let's concede for your purposes that we don't have one. Well, I want one. I want us to have that sense of shared endeavour and shared purpose, and because I think that gives us a valid and valuable part of our shared future. So to that extent, but I think that people holding themselves apart within their little groups, seeing the world through prisms of identity politics. I'm this colour, you're that colour. I'm this gender, you're that gender. I'm inclined this way politically, I'm inclined that way politically, you're inclined that way politically, and so forth. I regard that as negative, or at least something which, if we are going to pursue it, should be subsumed beneath the notion of a shared national future and that shared national tradition. So, for example, I think I'm much closer to that French tradition in thinking that multiracialism is to be admired in a country, but multiculturalism is not. We ought to bind together and say there is something we call British culture, and we should protect it, honour it, and seek to elevate it. And part of that culture has to come from our history. Now, I'm very conscious we're a long way from the question on statues, but I hope, Saeed, you find it as interesting as I do.
No, I do find it as interesting. And when we talk about our sort of shared history, if we could come to a shared history, you would still have figures that over whom we would disagree.
For sure.
So for example, and even figures that people think as heroes, for example, William Wilberforce. You know, we've seen some historians write that the Clapham set were very much in favour of abolition of slavery, but actually very much in favour of the British Empire and imperial expansion. So maybe if you're a Afro-Caribbean descent, you see Wilberforce in a positive light because he abolished slavery. But if you are of, say, Indian descent, you may think, well, hold on a minute, he supported the expansion of the empire in India and elsewhere. So given these different views of historical figures, even people that we generally see as good at the moment, how do we get that shared history, Alex?
Well, on Steve's view, we don't. It doesn't matter because they all come down, so it doesn't matter whether they were any good or not. I don't mean to be unfair.
That's my view, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, from my perspective, your point now, say, actually doesn't go contrary to the argument that I was making. It's that individuals in the past are, like individuals in the present, complex, and ain't none of us, except a very fair few, according to the church, ain't none of us saints. And so, of course, individuals will have different aspects to their lives that can be, once you stop suggesting you're going to tear something down violently and you want to have a discussion about something genuinely, that kind of discourse can be productive, and it can provide part of the reality about the context of an individual in the way that Steve was saying, rightly saying, that history is in part an academic discipline. The point, though, is that we should still have room in our vision, in our idea of what constitutes a nation and what constitutes the good, for heroes and heroines, for the avoidance of doubt. we should be willing and able to say, here is one who lived the good life, or at least here is one who lived a better life than most of us, or even here is someone, flawed and imperfect as we all are, who achieved something worth commemorating. The difference between Steve's position and mine is he doesn't believe in commemoration this way, and I do. But I think not only do you get that national memory idea, but you also get inspiration and desire to achieve well and to do something well in your future by the example of great figures in the past. Some of that comes from people being heroes. And yes, some of that, I concede immediately, may be myth. And we can discuss as adults the myths that we might encourage or like as children and those we should lose. But nevertheless, I still think we should have room for heroes and for people we elevate above the norm. And part of that means building statues of them from time to time.
Okay. Steve, aren't you simply suggesting that what we're going to do under your Public Memorials Abolition Act, aren't you simply suggesting that we are going to remove our heroes, yes, to theme parks, but away from more public places?
Well, yes. Let me just sort of like respond to Alex and your own comment there. First of all, one of the things that really does annoy me a lot about the current moment and some of the people that Alex is talking about is the utterly anachronistic vision of way they think about the past. In other words, so that is not what you should do as a historian, certainly. You know, it's not the job of historians or of people who want to become historically informed to view the past as being a source of a kind of series of morality stories, basically. On the other hand, you know, the point is this makes the difference, as Alex has clearly said. When you put up a memorial to somebody, you're commemorating them, and the commemoration basically says that there's something admirable about them. Person involved, maybe a complex figure, maybe a flawed figure, but still ultimately admirable, as he, you know, very well says. Now, I'm not against that at all. I do think that there are, you know, people in the past who you can look up to as exemplars. Many of us will. What I'm denying is that it is either possible or I would even argue desirable to have, if you like, figures of that sort and a narrative associated with them, which will apply to everybody in a particular political community. Now, he mentioned Emmanuel Macron and what he was saying about France. I think France is actually the classic case study of just why this is so difficult and why, in fact, there is no single national memory in France. The French still can't agree about whether or not executing the king, Louis XVI, was a good thing or a bad thing, or how to evaluate it. They had a debate as recently as about a decade ago or so, in which it turns out that about 30% of the French public still take the view that that was an atrocious and appalling crime that should never have been done. And then the rest of them accept it as part of the Republican tradition. So
that's my view as well, actually, Steve, by the way.
Well, yeah, I thought it might be. I tend to lean to that view myself, actually, but not a fan of the convention or anything like that. But the point is that there is no shared memory there. It's deeply contested. We're quite fortunate in this country, I think, in one sense, in that, you know, the last time we actually took up arms against each other because of clashes of this kind was 300 years ago. But even so, I think that it is not actually possible, and I would argue desirable, to actually have or construct such a national memory, the kind that Alex is talking about, yeah, for Emmanuel Macron is trying to support. And I think that that doesn't bar commemoration or indeed holding up people as exemplary heroes and heroines. I have heroes and heroines of my own, like people I mentioned, Richard Cobden and John Bright and Gladstone, for example. Yeah. But the point is, I don't think that my particular evaluation of them should be embodied in a public discourse.
Saeed, I tell you what, I regard myself certainly as better informed on this question because I talk about it with Steve, as always when I talk to Steve. But I will tell you this, the reason most people are not going to take half an hour or 45 minutes to watch an IEA podcast to understand the nuances of the position that you admirably set forward. Even if I agreed with your bill, which for the avoidance of doubt, I do not, I would still decry it in the current circumstances because all of the context will be lost in favour of the idea that you support the current clamour for the destruction of all things or the removal of all things. All of the kind of intellectual weight that sits behind the sophisticated worldview that you have set out, and Saeed and I and supporters of the IEA will take time to listen, and the IEA audience will take time to listen to, will be lost on those who say, look, actually, look now at the fig leaf we have, a figure on the, broadly speaking, right, because that, believe me, that's how you'd be characterised, a figure on the right who lends support to the idea of taking these statues down, peacefully or not, will probably be lost in this as well, and start again from year zero. You speak from an admirably philosophically coherent perspective, but I fear you may not have thought through the way your position will be interpreted and abused and abused.
Steve, you say that there is no shared memory, and Alex agrees, but would like to see us trying to work towards a shared memory. But you say that these statues then become a subject for contested memories or debate. So given that, that's not a bad thing. Why not leave the statues where they are and let the statues become a source for debate and contested memory, rather than removing them from the theme park so that debate moves to the theme park rather than being in a public space?
Well, you could do that. And indeed, what you would have then, if you like, is competitive memorialization within the single public sphere, if you like. The problem I have with that actually is that it could become a source actually of the kind of thing Alex wants to avoid, which is a sort of, you know, political war of all against all. That actually he's just put forward very eloquently a pragmatic case against my position, which is that in the particular political context that we're talking about, my argument will be misunderstood and misinterpreted, which I think is obviously a very pressing danger. But I think that also there's a kind of pragmatic argument against that sort of position, which is that if you have a kind of clash in the public space itself of quite radically different narratives, that can have very bad political results. I mean, I think there's all sorts of reasons why you probably didn't want to do that. I mean, I mentioned the statue of Cromwell that we've got up here in Manchester, for example, one of only two in Britain, interestingly. And that was originally put up by the Liberals when they controlled Manchester City Council. And then when the Tories got control of Manchester and Queen Victoria was due to visit Manchester, they thought it would be inappropriate for Her Majesty to be confronted with the statue of a regicide when she arrived at the town hall. So they moved it away and they then put it in front of Exchange Station, where all the boat trains from Liverpool with the Irish immigrants came in. Now, the point is that was then the cause of an enormous kerfuffle. There was all kinds of very bitter arguments, and they finally shoved him off in a park right down at the bottom end of Manchester. Now, my point is, therefore, that yes, indeed, you could do what you suggest, Syed, but I think that that would actually be in some ways as bad as, if not worse than, what we have now. Now, if, on the other hand, you vacate the public space, in, as Alex says it, puts it, then I think what you will still do is have the debate, because, as he rightly says, a lot of people aren't going to be satisfied with that. There will still be a lot going on. But what you will then have is a debate where, if you like, the political space is not involved as much. In other words, it acts more as a ring holder between competing and clashing or discursive ideas about what kind of political community we are and where we should go.
Alex, do you agree with that?
Well, first of all, I think if with my PR professional hat on, if Steve really wants to sell it, you should probably call it something like the Pantheon of the Past rather than a theme park. I think you're probably going to have more luck selling it if you call it something like the Pantheon, which, of course, the French like very much. And with their culture, that's where they put a lot of their figures like this. But no, so the reason I don't agree with it is that actually, not to be rude, but I think you slightly mischaracterized my position. My position was, I do think we have a national memory, and even if we don't, I want one.
Right.
That's my position. I still think we've got, broadly speaking, a sense of what it means to be British and to be in part of British culture. And if that's wrong, then I want us to aspire to it. That was my
point. And do you think that is fixed, or do you think that's open to contestation?
No, it evolves over time. But the trouble with the point of view that we're discussing here is it suggests that individuals who've made contributions in the past with which we might take issue should no longer have their statues because we disagree with them. I mean, it is very much the idea that Steve was rehearsing, that Party X is in power, so it puts up all its statues. Mm-hmm. Then Party Y comes to power, normally violently in these sorts of regimes, remove all of Party X's and puts up their own. We've got to have some kind of loser's consent and some kind of recognition that people did things in the past we might disagree with, but they're still sufficiently significant historical figures that their statues remain there. But I've been taken off course by interesting questions. The real reason I disagree with it is the one that we've already discussed, which is it won't stop there even if you give in to all of these things. If you agree that the statue should come down, then it'll be the blue plaques. And when the blue plaques come down, it'll be the buildings that are behind them. This is the building which approved of some aspect of slavery, which saw the people, the debate happen when they said yes in it, tear down the building. This is the organization that permitted it to happen, abolish the organization. And if those bodies happen to be parliamentary building and the body happens to be parliament, then no doubt that demand will sometime soon come about getting rid of parliament in the same way that an organization that has taken for itself the name Black Lives Matter, a label, a name which I would contest they have no right to take for themselves, an organization which has seized this moniker, which is explicitly and overtly as a group Marxist and anarchist and wants to abolish or at least defund the police and calls on their fundraising page, happily taking donations notwithstanding this position, calling for the abolition of capitalism. That organization, people who campaign in those directions, cannot be appeased. And that's why, Saeed, no, I wouldn't, no matter how coherent Steve's arguments might be, and let's concede for these purposes, he even convinces me on this discussion today. Very unlikely, but let's say that he does. I still wouldn't give in. I still wouldn't vote for his bill if I had a vote on it. Because if we give in to their demand today, they'll move on and have a whole new set tomorrow.
Steve, do you agree with Alex's point that you're basically feeding the beast, as it were? I hope that I don't get told off for using that phrase. But you know that you don't intend to give in. But you know, and I know that you came up with this idea even before the current debate. But if you suggested this idea and suggested this act, it won't stop there. You know, they will go after, as Alex says, not just the statues and the blue plaques, but they'll also go after the buildings and the institutions.
Well, in one sense, it is clear that they will do that, because these people are, who I dislike as much as Alex does, let me make that clear, they're basically like Jacobins, or they're revolutionaries, essentially. They are like Jacobins or revolutionary Puritans who want to create a whole new world, basically, and therefore statues are actually just a symbolic issue for them. That's my point, really. And his as well, in a way, they're actually interested in something much more far-reaching and extensive. Now, my point is twofold, really, in rejoin response to Alex. The first is that if you take away, First of all, what I'm proposing is not simply conceding to these people, quite the contrary, because the whole point, the kind of argument they are implicitly or explicitly making at the moment, is that they want to take down these statues but replace them with others. This has actually been suggested by the government as well. And I think that many of the people who support this movement at the moment do in fact want to see other people commemorated. They have their own particular vision of the content of a shared memory or identity that they want to see embodied in this way in the public place. And if your response to say, well, nobody's going to have any of it, I mean, you will take away an issue which at the moment provides a kind of highly symbolic focus for what they're doing, and I think actually wrong foot them. Now, it's true that you may then get demands, as Alex says, for the complete abolition of institutions, let's say, of other kind of physical things, such as buildings and the like. The thing with that, though, I think, is that at that point, it becomes much clearer what is actually at stake, which is precisely the defense of a particular kind of legal and political order against people who want to radically subvert it. And I think now he basically, he wants to fight in the particular trench of public memorialization. I think that trench is actually something I wouldn't want to defend, because I think the whole idea is wrong from the get-go, basically, quite regardless of what this is. But I also think, in terms of the pure tactics of this, that simply saying that the whole principle of public memorialization, regardless of who it is, should not be accepted, is one that would actually wrong foot people of this kind.
What about this then? What about I was in the European Parliament for years. We used to look for compromises because there were never any majorities. Is there a sort of free market compromise here where you have four plinths in a square? You also have your pantheons or your theme parks or whatever you want to call it, or statue world or whatever you want to call it. And then you auction off those slots for a particular time. And the highest bidder wins, and it's completely transparent, raises a bit of revenue for the local authority, or for, and it's a free, it's a relatively free market solution. What are your thoughts on that, Alex?
No, Steve, it's your idea. You're after you.
I would be quite relaxed about that, actually. And you could add to it also the idea that the statues in this case would be time limited, probably quite a long time limit, but you could still do that. So I would be okay with that. That would strike me as being actually quite an interesting way of trying to square this particular circle, if you'd like.
Yeah, I take a different point of view, not least because much of the kind of memorialization and cherishing that we're talking about has in part some aspects of solemnity to it and dignity and gravitas. And that's part of the reason why people were so offended by attempts to defile statues of great figures. It certainly goes towards why people were so offended by people urinating on the cenotaph, with all that for which that stands. Cenotaph being in part one of its many purposes in national commemoration, a vivid demonstration for those whose graves could not be placed because their bodies could not be found. And that's what you're urinating on when you urinate on it. The trouble is with this sort of poll or, you know, competition you're talking about, Saeed, that it might drift in, believe it or not, it might drift into the flippant. And it reminds me of nothing so much as a Boaty McBoatface winning the competition for the name of the new Arctic boat once you open these things up for question. I love the great British sense of humour, and I actually don't believe in changing the rules. Once they've set that stupid competition, with a stupid name emerges, it should have been called HMS Boaty McBoatface, and we should have lived with it and learned a lesson from having a stupid set of rules. But I wouldn't go about it that way, given the very obvious likely outcomes. We should have, part of that civic space that I've been talking about, should have a sense of pomp, ceremony, and pride. And even in my lifetime, I think we've demonstrated that there are certain things that nobody is better in the world at in terms of those things and that kind of national commemoration. Whatever you think of the individual figures, I think of the funeral of the Queen Mother, I think of the funeral of Margaret Thatcher, which I attended. Those were moments in national life when Britain got it so right. And that in part we got it so right because there is a living great heritage sitting behind those institutions, like in one example, St. Paul's, and another, Westminster Abbey, and yet another in Parliament. That plethora of great national institutions we have, sitting behind it is the idea of a living heritage and a living legacy, which might somewhat be undermined if every town winds up with, no offence to those who follow football closely, their local skipper or favourite striker of the season being commemorated in the statue that gets put on the plinth for 10, 15, 20 years.
Now, you both agree on some, you know, disliking or disagreeing with some of the motivations behind the movements that want to topple these statues. But are they in danger of effectively being tripped up by their own internal contradictions or where they're going? So, for example, you know, we know the debate is inculcated with political correctness to its extreme, if you like. And one commentator has written that the left rightly exposed great chasms of inequality and hypocrisy in society, then proceed to throw themselves like lemons into that void, unable to obey their own edicts. Is this a fair conclusion? Does toppling statues actually risk politicising a movement to the point of meaningless?
Yes. This is a slightly different question you've raised here, Saeed, but you know, let me put what I say about that. If you want to bring about a revolutionary change in society, then doing things like toppling statues is something you typically do after you've done it, right? The idea, which seems to be gaining ground amongst in certain circles, that you make a symbolic gesture and somehow that's changed everything, is just, well, it's ludicrous and childish, quite honestly. I mean, if you do want to change the world completely, you should be mature enough to think that the kind of cathartic release of throwing down a statue, however good it may make you feel, and of actually, you know, doing some action like that is not going to actually change anything substantive. It may have political effects, the kind that Alex is talking about, but even then, I think that's very long term. So I think this is actually a kind of... I'm not, quite apart from the violence side of it and the fact that this is, you know, basically mob action, I'm not sympathetic to the idea that radical, if you are a radical in politics or want to change everything, this is the way to go. If you do, that should be like the cherry on the cake for it, not that. So I think there is a kind of contradiction here, as you rightly say.
Yeah.
What are you worried about? You know, doesn't topple these people who want to topple these statues, aren't they going to basically risk politicising their movement? It does become meaningless.
I think they run the risk of doing terrible damage to the fabric of our society, and I don't just mean the fabric, physical fabric, along the way. I think that seeing things so brutally through the prism of race in the way that some of the more extreme campaigners in this want to do has set back the cause of racial equality in this country by some way. Of course, identity politics has been with us for some time, and I decry that in and of itself. I like to think I don't see the world through people's colour, but by their merits and individual characters. But I really believe coupling that agenda with the kind of violence we've seen in so-called protests and pairing it with a far-left anarchist political agenda, I do think that sets back the cause of racial equality. So that's part one of why I think I'm concerned about it, even if statutory damage was small. But the second thing, Saeed, is this. I think that, of course, every society can be improved. I don't pretend we exist in some form of perfection in the United Kingdom. Although I'm very patriotic and proud of my country, I don't pretend it's perfect in the way that I'm sure everyone would agree, or hope everyone would agree. But if somebody claims that the kind of significant change they want to see politically will be realised by taking down a statue that really none of us noticed to begin with, I think they're lying. And I think people thought, moreover, are generating a false sense of oppression in what is, in my view, an incredibly tolerant country. If people prefer a confected vision of kind of statue-dominated politics, and that's what matters, over the reality of lives lived in pretty much the most tolerant of countries in the world, with one of the most cosmopolitan cities on the planet as our capital, then I think there's something wrong. And it's not with those they're criticising, and it's not with statues, it's with them.
Steve, I'm going to give you the last word, if you'd like.
Okay, thanks for that. I mean, I would take a slightly different riff from Alex. I mean, I don't actually disagree too much with that, except I would put it this way. If you want to change the world, what I would not do is what I think he would like us to do, which is to try to amend a kind of supposed shared national narrative, national story, if you will. I think that, yes, there are good grounds for wanting to reform certain aspects of contemporary British society. As he says, no society is perfect. We do better than other countries in some ways, maybe not as well in other ways. There's always room for improvement in any kind of set of human relations and institutions. But what I think I differ from him is in thinking that the way to do this is through amending or changing a supposed shared national identity, because to come back to our original point of disagreement, I am not, as he is, a supporter of this idea of a national identity. I'm a radical individualist, basically. I make no bones about that. And that means that I think that the attempt to create such a national identity, whether as a vehicle for change or as a vehicle for reform or keeping things the same, is A, not going to succeed, and B, is actually going to probably produce bad results. It's probably going to be counterproductive. I think you need to work out different ways of doing it.
So Alex Dean, Steve Davis, it's been a fascinating conversation. No doubt this debate will run and run, not only between the left and the right, but also amongst classical liberals themselves. And I think it just demonstrates, as Alex said, the diversity of thought and opinion within the classical liberal movement. We all want we want the central goals of freedom. We want a smaller state. We want to see more individual liberty. But within that spectrum of views, there are areas where we will agree and disagree. Can I thank the viewers for joining us today? If you want to see more of our online content, please check it out on IEA London YouTube channel. You can listen to our podcast on Podbean, and please look at our website, iea.org.uk. Thank you for watching or listening today.